This is React Podcast. I'm Chantastic. Today, we sit down with award-winning cartoonist, a Book of Art author, web animations expert, new member of the React Core team, and all-around lovely human, Rachel Neighbors. We talk about her journey to React, the Women at the Heart of React zine, this year's React Conf conference, and her charter to make React and React Native documentation friendly, powerful, and inclusive. We're doing something I've never done before. We've included a little bit of post-episode chatter. So after the conventional sign-off, there is more. Rachel drops some incredible career knowledge bombs that she agreed to include. Thanks to our sponsors, Linode and Infinite Red. Deploy a server in the Linode cloud in minutes, offering cloud computing plans for every workload, from simple web hosting to CPU-intensive needs like video encoding and machine learning. Linode offers a balance of power and price for every customer. When you're in the business of delivering content to customers, you know how important it is to have that content on a server as close to the user as possible. Linode helps you get there. They have 10 data centers worldwide, and two were just added in Toronto and Mumbai. Combine that with native SSD storage, a 40 gigabit network, and the industry's fastest processors, they can help you serve your customers as fast as possible. Visit linode.com/react to get a $20 credit. That's linode.com/react, and the promo code REACT2019 will automatically be applied. Infinite Red builds beautiful, functional apps in React Native, and they want to help you bring your ideas to life. Do you have an idea you want to see shared with the world? They'll help you build it. Have an app that's all kinds of busted and need to make it agile again? They can help you fix it. Use their expertise in design, mobile, React Native, Ruby on Rails, Node, Phoenix, and Elixir to get your app on track. Right now, when you sign up for a new project, you'll get two tickets to Infinite Red's Chain React Conf in Portland. Chain React is North America's only React Native conference, and attendees are saying it's the friendliest, most educational conference they've ever been to. At the conference, you'll get to meet the team and see why they're the React Native industry experts to help you take your app the distance. To start a project, go to our very special URL, reactpodcast.infinite.red. That's reactpodcast.infinite.red. Get two tickets to Chain React Conf 2020 and build a beautiful, functional React Native app with Infinite Red. Rachel Neighbors, welcome to React Podcast.
Thank you for having me, Michael. It's so good to be here.
It has been a pleasure getting to meet you this week. I was really excited to find out that you were going to be here, and I was going to be here, and I was going to get to find out what you're doing now that you're on the React Core team. How has your first day of React Conf been?
Overwhelming. It's amazing to be around. How many people are attending? Like 1,000?
I don't know. I imagine that it's somewhere between like 700 and 1,000, just yeah. Given how big the room is.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing to be out here with all these people who have been there with React from day one or have just come to the React community, and seeing them up on stage talking about solving their problems, big and small, both today, fresh out of the box, and from way back with all the context of how React has evolved over the years.
Yeah. It's been fun to see people kind of flexing with their, you know, React.js Conf year one t-shirts and all that kind of stuff.
I confess, this is my first React Conf. So I just thought those were special shirts. And I'm like, did they volunteer or something? How do I get one? I am pretty jealous of the staff. They've got purple ones this year.
I know. I feel like that's kind of like a ploy. Like the staff always have like a different color shirt, and like I always want one.
I know. I want one too.
It's like, you know, got to catch them all, and I can't catch those ones.
Especially since it's exactly my shade of purple.
I wonder if you could convince someone out of them before you leave.
Been trying.
So one of the really cool things about this event that I have not seen at any other event, not just a React event, but like any other event, and totally took me immediately back to high school, is that you made a zine for React Conf this year.
Yeah, this is, I guess this is like my solution in any situation is like, have you tried making a zine for that? I used to be an award-winning cartoonist before I got into web development and eventually ended up here working on the React team at Facebook. So every time I get very excited or inspired, I want to make a tiny comic book or a zine, which is short for magazine. It's like a little miniature zine magazine, very tiny booklet. And I just joined like in May, mm-hmm. May 28th. And one of the first things I wanted to do was to put together a tiny little zine of all the women who have contributed to CORE and or have been organizing the React community.
Yes.
It's 12 pages. Each one has a different profile with a portrait illustration of the woman in question as, I don't know if anyone's going to get this reference, but as a Sailor Scout from the classic Japanese series for girls, Sailor Moon. This was the magical girl anime that kicked off an entire generation of nerd girls.
Yes.
It's kind of an in-joke, so all of the characters, all of the women featured in this zine, they all have little uniforms on from the cartoon series. And if you know the series, you can spot it from a mile away. If you don't know it, you might just be like, why are they all in these sailor outfits? I don't know. So that was the fun part about making this. It was Nat Ellison who asked, actually, could I be a magical girl? And I was like, yes.
Yes.
Let me go ask all the other people if they also want to be magical girls. And so now they're all in Sailor Scout outfits from this series.
Now, I'm not totally familiar with all of the characters in Sailor Moon, but are there any additional like Easter eggs or tie-ins from the specific scout outfits that tie into like the personalities of these women as you see them?
Well, the artist that I worked with, Zyra, she did all the individual illustrations. She did incorporate tiny little nods to the different women's characters in there. Like one, she's very passionate about spending time outdoors on the weekends. She has like a leaf emblem on her outfit. But specifically, there is an Easter egg in there if you're familiar with the series. In the series, they're all, you've got sailors representing each one of the planets in our solar system.
Okay.
But there's a very important one, the star of the series, who represents the moon of our Earth, Sailor Moon. And as she grows, her outfit gets more and more complex, and eventually she ends up sprouting wings. It's an interesting series. It's a very interesting series. But to kind give a little nod to that character, you'll find that Sophie has wings of all the different characters,
yes,
that we could have referenced for her particular design. We gave her wings because she's sort of at the epicenter of,
yes,
React and one of perhaps the most iconic and recognizable women in the React community today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Her talk this morning was incredible. I've known for a while that these renderers are part of React, and you know they've done a tremendous amount of work to make them available in a nice way. But her talk this morning was fantastic, and like she made them so approachable, and like you know in a way that was just really brilliant. I definitely recommend that people watch that. As you constructed this book, were there certain like moments or stories that really tugged on your heart personally, that you were excited to share?
You know, it's interesting to answer that. I feel like everyone's story was unique, and none of them were particularly tragic or, you know, hard luck stories. Most of these were stories of passion, mm-hmm. and like, you know, Nat working on translations, Monica starting up her own local meetup to create a safe space. And these were all very heartfelt, but none of them really made me go, you know, like burst into tears and cry in a bathroom somewhere. There is an interesting story. So I was putting together all these interviews based on the women I knew and the women that they knew. You know, I would be like, hey, I would love for you to be in this scene. Do you know anyone else who has committed to CORE or is organizing a community? And I got a handful of names, and I was lucky to get most of them into this zine. Not all, unfortunately. We only had a few weeks to put it together. Mm-hmm. So a couple of people got left behind. I think one of them is emceeing today. and it was great. But at the last minute, one of my colleagues got back from India and said, right, why isn't Zainab in here, Rachel? She's like the number one JavaScript and React Conf organizer in all of India, and she should be in here. And I was like, I didn't know her, and nobody I talked to knew her. So it was amazing. And Zainab was such a great sport. She had so much information to share during the interview about what the React community is like in India that I learned so much. It made me commit that each of these interviews should be released in its full on a blog, like on Medium, and that will be happening in the near future.
Awesome.
With the illustrations, because we just couldn't fit every single word into this. And I'm really excited about that. So that wasn't really like something that pulls on my heartstrings, but mm-hmm. I think it was a good example of how even when you're being well-meaning and you're trying to be inclusive, unless you have friends and colleagues that overlap with groups of people that you just wouldn't intersect with yep. normally, it's so easy to just overlook entire swaths of a community. And I'm just so fortunate that I work with somebody like Sunil Pai. He had just come back. And I'm just happy to be working on a team where there are people with backgrounds that don't completely overlap with mine.
Yeah, it takes a lot of spotlights, right? Like you need to have people who are in parts of different communities so that you can kind of like bring people together and like see where you overlap and, you know, highlight people who are doing stuff that like you would have never known about. And that's one thing that's fun about even just coming to these conferences is you see, get to put faces to like efforts that you've seen. And you're like, oh, you're the sole person who's like making this thing happen that I've heard about. And I love seeing that. Now, one thing that I really enjoyed about this particular zine called Women at the Heart of React is that in these profiles, there was actually an incredible like wealth of information on just getting into open source, which I thought was really fascinating. Luna Roon, who just joined, I think, the React team.
Yes, there's a typo in this. I listed myself as the newest member of the React team in the cover, but actually it's Luna.
It's all right. We know now. So she talked about like having a fixed mindset and kind of like not thinking that like she could do computer science and software engineering and like just believing that was not something for her. Yeah. And overcoming that. And now she's on the React core team, you know, making React happen for all of us nerds. And I thought that was really awesome. I think there were some other Sophie in particular, you know, she talked about, you know, how she was, you know, contributing via Stack Overflow documentation and was kind of the number one committer to React from the outside, which was just really, really wild to hear. But these stories are fascinating because they showcase like how important community actually is to these products. And like, and ways that you can get in. And I think that a lot of times it's, you know, it's easy to think like, oh, well, I'm not good enough to contribute to the React core team or React core itself. And, you know, so I'll just leave that to, you know, other people. But this zine is just filled with stories, of people who braved that kind of that defeated idea and actually made a huge impact.
It's true. And it's interesting because you can start committing to core even in small ways. One of the things that I do on the React team is I'm currently working on overhauling React Native's documentation. And when I arrived, I actually started by drawing on my background in user experience design to run surveys of the people who are visiting the site and on Twitter and uncovered all kinds of things that broke a lot of the team's assumptions about the audience that we'd been writing for and the pull requests we've been accepting to the documentation. For instance, we found out that 10% of the people who were answering the survey visiting the site had no prior experience with programming.
Wow.
And a lot of people also accessing React Native documentation don't have experience with JavaScript. So opening up the documentation by saying, hey, if you understand React, React Native is like that, only with native components. Well, that was really really difficult to unpack for a lot of different people visiting the site. So I did a lot of measuring, and now I'm in the process of cutting and going through and taking what we have and making it even more better and more inclusive for those different groups of people who have different backgrounds. Inclusion and diversity, it goes beyond just, you know, your flesh and your bone. It also goes to your background. Mm-hmm. What kind of history do you have? Do you have a computer science degree, or are you coming straight out of boot camp, or is this mm-hmm. a project you're working on with your kid on the weekend? You want to write for every audience, and that is a challenge. And one of the things that we recently did as part of this documentation effort, and I want to give a shout out to my colleague Rick Hanoli right now, because I wanted to implement Alex.js to lint out exclusionary terminology, mm-hmm. little words like just and simply, easily, even ones that are ableist like lame. Mm-hmm. They sneak in because you have many people committing to this repo. Mm-hmm. It's 5 years old. And so Rick implemented Alex.js because he was totally passionate about this space as well. And so he labored for so long, and he was just going all out. And then it was so, we had like 200 things that needed correcting.
Wow.
And he made it his priority to do all of them for the most recent documentation. But for the older versions of the React Native documentation, of which there are many, he just was like, I don't have the energy to go back to do all of these. So he opened up a bunch of issues on GitHub and asked for people from the community to come in and help lint out all of those words. And people showed up. There were three people where it was their first pull request to the repo ever. And it's this small thing, but it's a lot of work for a core engineering team to do. And it makes such a big difference. And over in the React org at Facebook, we do consider pull requests to documentation as a contribution to core. Like that counts, because how you write for people mm-hmm. really does impact how your community grows. It's not enough for just a couple of people to understand how React works. Like, the more people who can come and understand it, the bigger community have, the more people we have submitting their contributions to core. It's a big part. Education is a big part of expanding a code base's reach and empowering more people to do more with less code.
I love that. I love that definition. It does seem like documentation is one of those things that we ignore a lot, right? Like, we want to focus on the code, and that feels like the primary like objective. And then we kind of like slap on some documentation and do the bare minimum to just say, this is how the thing works, right? Like, we've seen plenty of libraries where it's like the documentation is effectively just like a type definition for that thing. And I feel like React has been better at this, but I'm really excited to see your role. And it's fascinating to hear that you said 10% of people had no programming experience.
The ones answering the survey. I always have to qualify it because some people won't answer a survey. But this is specifically a survey that we left a link up to for 2 weeks to make sure that we caught people. I learned that from working at booking.com. We let experiments run for 2 weeks to catch people on weekends and after holidays mm-hmm. and get a really nice base set of data. So these were people who would have visited the site within 2 weeks and would have filled out a survey. And 10% of those people said they didn't have prior experience with programming.
That's fascinating. So in a way, like, React Native is like their like angel fire, I guess, for me. Like, in their first experience into what they could do, what they could make a computer do.
Exactly. And I mean, it's very exciting to be that first experience for somebody.
Yeah.
But it's also very challenging to write materials that are useful to both beginners and experts who are running maybe on production code. This is exciting. Like, right now, the React Native community is just so happy to have people who are willing to write from the mobile developer experience perspective to the web developer's perspective, because there's people from an iOS or an Android background have a completely different vocabulary than people from a React or web background. And they bring so much to the table. It's exciting to have them as part of the community. And I feel like we're just so happy every time we're getting documentation contributions from somebody with that domain level knowledge who can translate. It really does open up the possibilities of what those people who are coming for the first time, like this is their introduction to mobile development.
Yeah.
It just really helps cement them in.
Well, that's interesting, particularly in the React Native case, because it is additionally complicated because its goal is to overlap like three technologies, mm-hmm. right? Which is, you know, or four maybe, right? You have JavaScript, the language, you know, React, and then the two platforms that you're targeting. So that is a really tricky thing to kind of coalesce into one cohesive message when it's all of these things being brought together. What are your biggest challenges as you work with the team, work with the community to make that messaging cohesive and friendly for all?
One of the bigger challenges is simply using the right terminology for each group. For instance, web developers will be completely unfamiliar with the concept of view or text, all of the different components or views that are available to native developers. But at the same time, iOS and Android developers would like to see things written in their language as well.
Sure.
They don't know how Flexbox works. So just throwing a CSS3 spec and being like, it's Flexbox, you got that? That's really not inclusive for them.
Yeah.
So the big challenge right now is being able to write in many languages, being able to translate things. I remember when I was learning JavaScript for the first time, like a decade ago, it was a really frustrating time to learn JavaScript.
Yes.
Because all of the books on JavaScript were written by people who had prior experience with another language. So they come in and be like, well, JavaScript is a little annoying because it doesn't have classes. And I'd be like, oh, what's a class? And I didn't have anybody to ask.
Yeah.
Now there are more JavaScript books that assume you have no prior experience with development or programming, and they don't try to explain to you why prototypal inheritance isn't that bad. They just like, this is how it works. And it makes sense. If that's the first time you've ever seen it, you're like, oh, okay, it's kind of like genetics. I get it. And I mean, for me, I struggled with the explanation that was written for programmers, not the explanation of what JavaScript is.
Yes.
And I try to keep that in mind, that these documentations, they are written for people who are speaking so many different kinds of languages and have so many different kinds of backgrounds. So sometimes I'll have to be like, so this is a span in HTML, but we call them views here. And for everyone in the back who's familiar with mobile, just ignore the web speak for a moment. So there are a couple of different ways for tackling that, like doing sidebars that would, you know, have new terms introduced in different contexts, and you could tab through them. We considered having a switch on the site where if you had a background in iOS, you could just be like, I want to view this as explained to iOS.
Oh, interesting.
Folks. Problem is, from the interviews, turns out a lot of people had multiple backgrounds. Like, they did a little iOS in college, but now they're doing Java, their main job. Or they know a little bit of JavaScript, but, you know, nothing to do with iOS. And we couldn't really subject people with multiple capacities to picking one path. You really have to give them all the information and try to draw as many parallels as you can, including, like, little graphs and little charts that show you, like, what this word means in four different languages.
I love that. So tell me a little bit more about your background. I know that you mentioned you did award-winning comics, and then also you worked on Standards Bodies, you worked with Google, you worked doing all kinds of work. Tell me a little bit about the experience that you're drawing from as you join React on this endeavor to improve their docs.
Well, I think my recruiter said, whoa, you have a very eclectic background. And I had to explain the sort of the thread that led me here. I used to be an award-winning cartoonist. Right before the recession hit, I realized I needed to get a job with health insurance to pay for some jaw surgery. And I looked at all the skills that I had been using to promote my comics. It included building a Drupal site because we didn't have Facebook groups, mm-hmm. Installing OS Commerce because we didn't have Etsy, and Tin Can PHP because there was no MailChimp. So I was doing all these things to show off my comics and get paid to make them every week, but it wasn't enough. And I realized I could get paid to do those things for other people. And I launched my career as a web designer. I think I should have been a web developer, but people would look at my arting ability and be like, oh, visual must be a designer. Now I look back and I'm like, Rachel, no. But point was, I took that art and the recession was rough. I got my surgery and then I looked around and was like, I actually really enjoy doing cool demos using my art skills and working on web animations. And I'm going to just travel the world, give talks about those things and make cool demos. And I did work with the W3C on the Web Animations API. I documented that API with MDN. I wrote a book on user interface animation with A Book Apart. I did that with consulting for a little bit.
Yeah. But
web animation is kind of like comics in that it sounds great on paper and looks really glamorous from a distance, but it's not really a living. So I was like, I love this. I love working on all these APIs and documenting them, but I think I'm going to need a little bit more meat on them bones, so to speak. So I ended up transitioning into working on Microsoft's Edge browser. And then I moved to Amsterdam to work on Booking's design system. And then I came here to work on React. I'm excited because React is very much about comp and rendering. And mm-hmm. comp and rendering are kind of like my jams because it's tied in heavily with animation.
Yes.
The engineers I worked with at Microsoft on Edge's comp and rendering stack were just like the best people ever. A lot of them actually work at Facebook now. And I figured, well, if they're happy, I should definitely check that out. But the common thread is I love teaching people. I love building communities. And I definitely love visual interface design and the challenges that come from making something responsive and delightful for a wide audience.
It feels like you're joining React at the perfect time because as like Tom was saying in his keynote, React has focused for a long time on developer experience, mm-hmm. but it's really pushing into user experience and trying to improve user experience and give developers those things by default.
Right.
And it feels like this is the perfect time for someone with your skill set who loves to be in the, you mentioned design systems and comp and rendering and all that, to be communicating that message about what React's future is, whether it be React Native or React Core. What are you excited about in some of these talks about concurrent mode and the way that we're thinking about delivering user interfaces in a more stable and predictable way?
Having worked on a number of design systems, I have to say that concurrent mode is the thing that has got me jazzed. Especially since we're actually breaking down and quantifying when these leaps in user perception are happening. Mm-hmm. I've worked on so many projects where just trying to build in some of this functionality, it was monumental. It got to the point where people are just like, oh, just put any old spinner on the page. We need to move on now. And that's not how you make a great user experience.
Yeah.
It's in the details. Mm-hmm. User interfaces should not jump around. It's very disorienting, especially for older users. I watch my aunt struggle with these things. And to build properly for as many people as possible requires a level of finesse in these frameworks that is simply not possible without dedicating the kinds of resources to it that, well, I'm very proud to say React has managed to get. Mm-hmm. We've had such a long think on this. Like, so many good, talented engineers. I hate to use the word talented. It makes it sound like it's innate and inborn, but it's really like, did they do 10,000 hours or 100,000 hours? But we've had so many hours put into this, not just into like Concurrent itself, but the hours that led up to being able to have those thoughts, the massive engineering reactor that is Facebook, you know, kicking the tires on these concepts and testing them in production before they even reach the public versions that people are putting into production these days. Well, actually, all of React is public, but, you know, like the stable version that people are, you know, I hope you're not putting unstable versions into production. But the point is, when we're like, it's stable, it's okay, it's passed all our tests, it's not breaking anything at Facebook, it's your turn now. That is such a gift.
Yeah.
It is so hard for any one team to try to solve these problems. Mm-hmm. I've watched, and it's sticky and it's difficult.
Yeah.
And it's just great to see the massive amount of time and thought that needed to be put into solving some of these problems. Mm-hmm. It's been done, at least in this instance.
Yes.
Other instances are out there and will arise in other frameworks and other utilities. But it's good to see that for the React community, now we have the opportunity to work on bringing these out-of-the-box solutions to our systems.
Yeah. I can't wait. And I know that you must know this from your experience as well, just, you know, in web animation, that marrying animation and interactivity and a product, right, the thing that has, you know, a task that's doing, is very difficult. And there's a lot of connective tissue that we end up having to write that is like not super clear when we like come back to it a lot of times. And it really does seem like there's so much happening in that space, you know, from Facebook's work on the next Facebook that is trickling down, that we get to just kind of like take advantage of and now move forward with, like, you know, like, we're not all the way there yet, but like a little bit closer, and like hopefully being able to like clarify those boundaries in a way that it's not either or, right? Like, you either get it fast and reliably, or you get it beautifully. But that we can kind of bring those things a little bit closer together on the web in the way that maybe people have enjoyed them on native devices for a while.
Oh my God. There's so much further for us to even go, even on web. And I always have looked to native development for the best, you know, in gestures and animations. Mm-hmm. Because it's built right into the system. It's as close to the metal as you can get. And I've appreciated that. I know the things on the web, like the Web Animations API, I try to get closer to bringing that sort of performance to the web. But it's difficult. Gestures have a lot of patents around them. We don't have anything like those for the web. We have pointer events. It's a good start. But we don't have, you know, native gestures for the web yet. Every different operating system has their own implementation that's not really surfaced. It is hard to just get things to show on a page in a way that does not confuse and alarm people and is performant. We still have so many miles to cover before we can create beautiful, performant, and intuitive experiences with a minimal amount of invested effort for any one team. But I love that because of open source, we can all put our heads together.
Yes.
And try to solve these problems, because I think in the end, it really does come down to having the sheer number of minds thinking about these problems over many hours. That does let us overcome them. And I hope in the future, some of the cow paths that frameworks like React are treading will be paved and become part of the open web as well.
Oh man, me too. I got to talk with Andrew a little bit, and he is, you know, talking about the collaborative work that, you know, the React core team is doing with Google. And it just, I'm excited to see that.
Me too.
it's kind of felt like there's a lot of tension there. I know that, like, communities wise, you know, like React versus Web Components or whatever. And to be able to see, you know, the Chrome team collaborating with React and talking about things that we can agree on, which is, you know, like scheduler and all that stuff, all those things that I don't quite understand. It's really fun to see people putting their heads together, as you mentioned, more people putting their heads together instead of fighting over things that we don't quite exactly agree on.
Agreed. one of my reasons for working, I mean, I remember when I announced I was coming to join React, some of the people who know me from my standards work were like, what is this? What are you doing working on a framework? This isn't standards. What? Get back to the W3C, Rachel. And I remember telling them that I deeply believe that the work people are doing on frameworks like React, like Vue, Ember, etc., I know from my work with the Web Animations API and user interface animation that the paradigms we have currently on the open web don't really accommodate for what users expect.
Yep.
And a lot of these frameworks are doing the things that long ago standards bodies and browsers and just open consortiums used to do for the community. You know, we used to have a chat about, do we need a heading tag? Do we need a headers tag? And we would have those conversations in the open, and we got a lot of new CSS features out of that, rounded corners, woot woot. we got a lot of new semantic markup out of that. And now that conversation, that sort of give and take, has definitely moved into the realm of, well, interaction design, which is fundamentally written in JavaScript. Mm-hmm. And that conversation is happening in these frameworks and libraries today.
Yep.
And this is it. This is the next frontier. The patterns we discover that work here, these are the ones that we're going to be committing to for generations to come. Mm-hmm. So it's exciting. And I want to say, like, no pressure, but make sure y'all get it right.
Well, the animations, and then also there's been a tremendous move recently in accessibility.
Yes.
Into JavaScript. I think that up until a few years, the idea is like, well, you know, just use semantic elements and just use these couple of attributes, and like things will work fine. But as views become incredibly more complex and more interactive, so much of that effort is having to be poured into JavaScript for, you know, like focus trapping and like knowing where someone is and like when a thing pops in over here. You know, there's so much happening that it's kind of gone beyond just use semantic elements and, you know, a couple of attributes. So even it, to your point, like even accessibility is headed in like squarely into JavaScript.
The bright side is that I don't want to say we can automate accessibility out of people's concerns box, but I think we can take a lot of the pain of it out. I mean, when I worked on design systems at Booking, you know, it's this huge company, it has to be compliant with accessibility guidelines or else you can get fined. And it was so hard to remind the engineers it can be framed as engineers just don't care. But yeah. I like to think of it as engineers are just trying to get their work done so that they can go home and still get a report that says they did a good job.
Yes.
And accessibility can be a big part of that, but very often it isn't. And we could campaign to make managers care about accessibility. Mm-hmm. But even with the threat of a fine hanging over various officials' heads, it can be hard to rally an org to put that front and center. If baking it into a framework means that the risk is decreased and the number of people who can access the site is increased, that is still a win.
Yeah.
And that is a huge win. The more that we can bake into the platform for everybody to make this a place everyone can come to, the better. we'll still need to have explanations for what you need to do to make certain complex interactions accessible. Mm-hmm. Of course, we are still going to have those conversations. Nothing is set it and forget it. But hopefully, we can just take some of the nightmare scenarios that we have today, mm-hmm. and we can just engineer them into extinction. Mm-hmm. That is, I think, the hope and the promise of some of these efforts today.
Yeah, and I'm really excited, having seen some of the examples of the next Facebook, how much effort they've put into accessibility, and then making sure that in development environments that if it can't be read, it can't be seen. And I'm excited. I know that there's nothing official like in the works, but I'm excited to see how that trickles down into React itself. Because like you said, the more that we can make this, you know, default and easy and bake it into the technologies that we use, the better the web gets for everybody. So how can people track along with the work that's going on in the React Native docs? And better yet, how can they contribute if they care to?
So the best way to get started contributing to the React Native docs is to go to React Native's GitHub account. You can go to the React Native documentation online, and there's a link in any one of our documentation pages. If you hit edit, it'll take you right to the GitHub repo. And we have issues that are open, and we have PRs that are open, and we are always happy for people to have a look at the issues and submit a PR that addresses those things. If you would like to work on helping us with the bug hunt, the linting of exclusionary terminology, I think we're almost about done with that, but they are in the issues queue as well. And you can always reach out to me. I am always looking for domain knowledge experts who want to contribute to the docs. I'm currently working with a number of amazing React Native community members to provide some more documentation on topics like privacy and localization. Cool. And a couple of other topics that we just don't have yet. And so if you know something really amazing that you want to share with React Native, I would be more than happy to help you get that into the documentation.
So if people want to follow along with you and the rest of your kind of showcasing of women at the heart of React and your documentation efforts, and just you as a person, where can people follow along?
Excellent question there. Best place to follow along is to find me on Twitter. I'm Rachel Nabors. That's Nabors. And I tweet pretty often. Most of the times it's GIFs of magical girls transforming. But sometimes there's a call to action in there to help us lint a bunch of documents or write a section on native modules for the React Native docs. I hope I'll see you there.
Awesome. Rachel, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. Take care.
Hey, before you go, this is the post-episode chatter that I mentioned at the top. This is incredible career advice, and I'm thrilled to share it with you. We'll be jumping back in now.
I'm always a little nervous about talking. I consider it onboarding into the React community. No, seriously, like I came here from the W3C and a very CSS heavy community.
Yeah.
And I haven't been here for all of the battles that this team has fought.
Yeah.
I haven't, like, look at Sophie. Oh, Jesus. Sophie was like the first commit on the React repo.
Yeah.
And then Dan came in, and Dan knows everything about React. He, like, back when React was started, you could read the code base and figure out what it was doing. Just by reading that code base. Now you got to read docs to figure out what it's doing because the code base is too darn big. And the docs exist to make that code base nice and approachable for people like me who are coming in after great people like Sophie and Dan who understand the code base from soup to nuts.
Yeah.
And I got to say, like, I don't know, you might actually want to use that somewhere, but it's a lot. It's a lot to have to go in there and take all the knowledge that these people have inside them and share that out to other people. It's a great challenge. It's why I joined to do it.
Yeah, it's exciting. I think that, like, what a fun place to learn from, right? Like,
oh, yes.
And I think that's the thing that I'm so excited about, that, you know, the React team had the vision to hire you to be a part of this thing to bridge that gap in knowledge, right? Because the thing is that like it shouldn't be an expectation that you have that community knowledge, the history, the deep understanding of like all of these things to be able to understand React and be productive with it. And I love that you're in that spot and don't have a long history with React, because it gives you an insight that like I feel like none of us can have anymore, right? Because like we've been through like a lot of it, and have that kind of like translation piece where it's like we think about it from like create class to like now functions with hooks, and it's like now you can just be like this is the way we do it. This is the best way. Like we don't have to have all that baggage and all that stuff.
Yeah, in the React Native docs, for instance, like there was a question of should we just do all the new examples and hooks, or should we also include like the classes? And I'm a big proponent of we should have hooks shown first, but there should be a little tab that you can click to see the same code in classes for people who are working in older code bases, mm-hmm. which the interviews and surveys have shown that a lot of people do come to React Native because they were put on a React Native project at work. And that means they're going to be working with older code, probably not the latest and the greatest. They're going to be working with some classes somewhere in there, somewhere.
Yes.
And I'm a big proponent that we should have both versions available, but be hooks first.
Hooks first.
Because it is the future.
The future.
But there are some things that you can only do with classes. So we have to still include those references somewhere.
Yeah.
Just to be polite, at least.
Yeah, and I think it is. There is definitely a balance there, right? Because not everyone who's coming to it is coming to it with fresh eyes, and it's not always the best idea to do those big refactoring projects just for syntax, right? And a lot of people do have a lot of classes. I'm sure Facebook is not excluded from having a lot of classes in the code bases.
We have a lot of engineers, but I would be surprised if we had completely transitioned from classes to hooks.
Be a big effort.
I mean, maybe it's that kind of company. I haven't been in production on any of our projects before, but like maybe I'd get in there and be like, wow, so you transitioned over to hooks in like 2 months. Wow. Dang.
Nice work.
Yeah. It's weird working for such a big company.
Oh, I can't imagine.
I've worked at big companies. Like, I've worked at Microsoft, and I've worked at Booking. I gotta say, I love Facebook's attitude the most.
Uh-huh.
The people working there, it's just so nice. Everyone is constantly challenging each other to do better.
Yeah.
There is a really refreshing spirit of having open disagreements.
Yeah,
like you can disagree with anybody, and I disagree with a lot of people a lot, and I love not being punished for that.
Yes.
But I also have been spending most of my time just quietly listening with pen and paper in the back, being like, "What's a suspense boundary?" You keep using that word boundary. What's that?
What's boundary mean?
And sometimes I have to like go off to Wikipedia at the end of the day and just like I don't want to
just look up all
myself.
Your words.
Yeah.
Totally.
But the engineers are working with engineers is like the best thing I think you can do.
Yeah.
If you're really passionate about the work that you're doing, at least working at one of these large companies with their engineers will go a long way to like, once you do that, any place you work after that, you bring a lot to the table.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You will bring a whole different way of thinking about things to the table with you.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you go and you join Microsoft or I don't know, Stripe or something, and you get in there and you're like, oh, I can't, this is too much for me. I can't. Even then you will walk away having learned a lot about what works, what doesn't, not just for the system, but for yourself. And that is still valuable.
Yeah.
I always like to have that moment where I underline, like, even if you think you're a failure, you're not really a failure because you're still here.
Yeah. I like that. Like it's nice to, like, you could be like a big fish in like a small pond, right? Or like, I mean, like that classic analogy, or like, you know, a small fish in a big pond. And that is true. Like fighting to survive in like an organization is a really fun place to be sometimes.
It can be scary too.
Yes.
I know a lot of women who they're like, I'm worried about trying to pass this interview circuit. And I know I was one of those women.
Yeah.
But having been on the other side of those circuits now, and trust me, you don't want to know how I've wiggled past these circuits. So I think it's a lot of luck.
Sometimes it does take that.
All you got to do is get them to say yes to you once and you're in. Like, that's it. But additionally, the process of gearing up for it, it's not, okay, instead of thinking of it as like, oh, it's an insurmountable barrier, I'm never going to make it to the other side of this interview process, I should just give up, I didn't quit. Don't think of it like that. Think of it as like a maze with this juicy, delicious six-figure job in the center of it. And you have to run the maze. And instead of being like, oh gosh, there's so many walls between me and that thing, ask yourself how you can game that system.
Yeah.
It's a maze. You could jump to the top of it and run across the tops of the walls to the center. Mm-hmm. You could wash away all the walls with a flood. You could do all kinds of things, or you could just get some string and start finding your way in. In this case, I know people, they apply for steadily harder interview challenges, working their way up with okay. no intention of winning any of the interviews, simply using those interviews as practice leading up over a 6-month period before they go in for quote unquote big ones.
Yes.
And also you could look at other things. Like, I know people who say that, you know, like they work at Amazon and they're like, I came in through design, because they'll hire anyone who can do design, but they have very stringent standards about development. But the internal interviews are much easier after you've been working with the people here.
Yes.
And gotten familiar with the systems. And there's all kinds of ways that you can go about trying to find your way in. And for me, once I stopped looking at it as like, oh, those jobs aren't for me, they're for computer science grads. And I started listening to computer science podcasts and just like doing drills with friends on some of these interview guides, like Cracking the Coding Interview. Once I started thinking of it as a game, it's so much better.
Oh, yeah.
And I highly recommend anyone who's like, that could be fun to do, think of it as like a game. Not some insurmountable gate, but as a game, and you're trying to figure out how you can get the prize at the end of it.
That was a real key for me. Like, I think you nailed it, the idea of these things are restrictive. They do make it difficult, but they aren't insurmountable, and you don't have to do everything as prescribed.
Right. It's actually, that's kind of the test.
Yes.
It's sort of like the M&M's test, or the test in Men in Black, where they're all trying to fill this thing out. And Will Smith is the only person who gets up and goes over and gets a table and sits right. it in front of his chair while everyone else is trying to write on their chair or their knee or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And he goes and gets the table. I like to think of it as that kind of a challenge. You got to be a little wiggly when you come from an unconventional background.
Yes.
You got to be a little clever and think about how to tackle things from different sides and angles. But that's kind of the magic that you're bringing to the team.
Yes.
And yeah, that is very valuable.
You're proving your street smarts.
Yeah. And your creative thinking.
Yeah.
While you're like on the job, like there's something you want, you have to get there. You have so much time and this background. Go, 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 go. And it's possible. I'm not saying it's fun or it's pleasant or that, you know, we shouldn't interview people differently across the community. We totally should. But I'm saying
Absolutely. There
shouldn't be anything about the way things are that stops you from going for things today. Like, I believe in other people, and I want to do whatever I can to help them and encourage them to go for it.
Yeah. I feel like we're aligned in that. I have a lot of friends who are, I guess, earlier in their careers right now, or they're like transitioning into tech or whatever.
Yeah.
Even different industries. I mean, we're not alone in tech in the difficulty of getting jobs that you really want. And I mean, honestly, it might even be easier for us than like other industries. But
the whiteboarding interview could be like saving grace. You don't need a degree yeah. if you can just whiteboard it.
Right, exactly. And I've been trying to encourage people in the same way that you have, which is like, you just, well, like you said a second ago, like you just need to get that first one, right? Like, you just got to figure out who's going to let you get in there. And then you just kind of snowball it from there. Like, mm-hmm. it's easy once you have a little bit of momentum. It's like the first one is the hardest. And man, like, companies are so desperate for help in so many areas that it's so easy to kind of wiggle your way into another thing, you know, once you're in the door.
And be clever. Like, if you know there's going to be a really gargantuan software engineering test, like with Amazon, see if there's another role that they like some coding experience, mm-hmm. but they want you to do something else that you have tons of experience in. And just tell yourself you're going to go do that for 6 months, and then you're going to roll over into the more interesting stuff that you're mm-hmm. more passionate about. Like, there are so many different ways that you can game the system. And I say this as a person who was looking down at their feet and being like, oh, this isn't for me for so very long. And I kind of want to go smack myself upside the head and be like, no, no, do not think that way. You are limiting yourself by thinking that way. Go find some other people who want in and work like a pack of velociraptors together.
Yes.
You know, like, nobody can stop a group of people who've set their mind to something.
Yes.
It's literally, you're just trading off time.
Yes.
Against how long it will take a group of people to figure out how to do something.
Yes.
So, like, that's brilliant. You can figure it out. I've watched women coordinate on, you know, doing drills through the cracking the coding interview books. Uh-huh. And I mean, Base CS podcast is just amazing.
Oh, incredible.
I just put that on the weekends and make tea, and
yeah.
it just helps me so much at work to have more of a background in these concepts that mm-hmm. other people got by going to college.
Yeah. We actually, I just had a call with Vita E, and it's going to go out pretty soon. She's amazing.
Yes.
Devin was talking about like people who are like just kind of your like coding, like a handful of your coding heroes. And I have a handful, but Vita, he's definitely one of them. I was like, I had a moment when I was doing that interview where I was like pinching myself. I'm like, am I talking to Vita Joshi right now? Because like, she freaking slays.
She does. And you know, anytime I get down in the dumps, and I do this a lot, and I'll be like, I don't have a computer science degree. I haven't been studying React since 2013. You know, like anytime I'm doing that, I'm like, Rachel, how long did Vita Heath study computer science before she started doing podcasts about it? I'm like, 3 years. I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry. What are you looking at your feet for? If Vita Heath can go out there and learn enough about something to teach it in that amount of time, I am sure you can put your mind to it and accomplish something at least moderately similar. I mean, I'm not Vita Heath. But it's a kind of a testament to you really can get good at anything you set your mind
yes.
to.
I always like to say it's never if, it's always when.
Mm-mm. And even if it takes you a little longer or you need to use a different set of learning resources than other people do, like, you know, maybe you don't like to watch videos, maybe you like to read things, mm-hmm. that's okay. The fault is never like you're not good enough. It's usually you didn't have access to the right learning materials for your learning style, or you didn't have enough time to focus on it. You know, if you can spend just half an hour a day or half an hour a week even, mm-hmm. it can go a long way to taking you closer to those goals.
Yep.
I don't believe in innate talent, but I do believe in investing time and energy in the things you want to get good at.
Thanks, Rachel, for being an incredible part of our community. We're delighted that you're on the React Core team and grateful that you're highlighting the tremendous women that make React what it is. I'm thrilled to have an autographed copy of my Women at the Heart of React zine and look forward to the next issue. For episode links, visit reactpodcast.com/76. If you're new to React, I'm doing my annual introduction series. You can find it via Twitter, YouTube, dev.to, or email by going to react.holiday. Whether you're a React pro or brand new to React, there's plenty for you in this modern introduction to React, hooks, suspense, and concurrent mode. Thanks to our wonderful sponsors for making this episode possible. Bring your ideas to life with React Native. Hire the industry experts at Infinite Red. Visit reactpodcast.infinite.red. That's reactpodcast.infinite.red. And get 2 tickets to next year's Chain React Conf in Portland. Meet the team and see why they're the ones to take your React Native app the distance. Linode. instantly deploy and manage an SSD server in the Linode Cloud. Get a server up and running in seconds with your choice of a Linux distro, resources, and node location. Get a $20 credit when you visit linode.com/react, or if you're already on linode.com, you can use the promo code REACT2019 at checkout. This episode of React Podcast was edited by Mikhail Delport. It was produced by Mikhail Delport and Sarah Jackson. You can find React Podcast on Spec, a network to help designers and developers level up. Visit spec.fm to find other shows that will take you further in your career. Help us out by reviewing this show on iTunes. Your reviews help the show grow and help us ensure great guests and awesome content week to week. To join the discussion, visit reactpodcast.com/chat or follow us on Twitter at reactpodcast. I'm at Chantastic. To stay out of the discussion but get updates, visit reactpodcast.com/news and sign up for emails. Thanks so much for giving us your attention. We'll be in your ears again next week.